McDonald's Family McValue Box.
Triple M rocks footy. This is the Sunday Rub.
One favourite in six games has saluted so far today on the Sunday Rub. Rocket Eid on the Suns. And what's Gary Ablett up to? Carlton's reigning BNF winner Sam Doherty joins us. And it's the Hawks versus the Demons from the MCG. Melbourne CEO Peter Jackson will drop by. And the Hawks assistant Brett Ratton on how his club is going to turn it around. Plus all your favourites, the quiz, Roosie stories. And Jay-Z is bursting at the seams with news that is. Big lineup coming your way. The Hawks versus the Demons. I look around, Paul Ruse is here, the Duck is here, Jay-Z and Swatter. We'll start with you. Swatter, how are you this morning or this afternoon?
Very good. Not a bad day. A little bit chilly. Looking forward to the Hawks and the Demons.
Yeah, nice good day at the MCG. There's a bit of rain around. Bit going on too, Jay-Z. Just a round of upsets today.
Oh, the tipping was in real strife last night. At halftime with Richmond on the verge of, I thought they might be on the verge of an upset against the Bulldogs. I was looking at duck eggs, zero tips. But I managed to sneak one in, but it was in real trouble. Can't wait for the game this afternoon. Jordan Lewis, do you reckon there'll be any niggle with his former Hawthorn teammates here? Hawthorn and the D's taking on today. It's going to be an interesting game.
Well, I've heard all week Geordie saying he's not interested in sticking up the club that he came from. I'll tell you right now, that is absolute fiddlesticks. The Duck is here. Hello, Ducky boy.
G'day,
one
gentlemen.
Button done up today. Looking sharp as always.
How are we? What about the weather in Melbourne, Roosie, the last 4 or 5 days? You get up, the sun's shining, just a nice crispness. Go for a nice jog, walk, Howie. It's been lovely. Looking forward to today's game. As Jay-Z said, a lot of upsets. Good for footy, I reckon.
And Roosie's in the house. Hello, Roosie. Interesting game of footy yesterday. We'll discuss the Pies and the Carlton in a moment, but you get to see your Demons run around today.
Yeah, I tell you, if you're the favourites today, which are probably Sydney, Melbourne, yep. Freo. Yep. You'd be a bit nervous, wouldn't you, after the results of the weekend. As you said, we're going to discuss that now because it's great for footy. I mean, it's great the fans of every team can go and have a sneaky little chance to win. Suns over the Cats, great. North smashing the Crows. So it's great. It's great for footy. It's what the AFL want after a long period of expansion with compromised drafts, and I think we've finally got to the point where we're all enjoying it.
Well, that's what the whole competition has been aimed at, hasn't it, since we had the draft come in, and as you say, it's gone a little bit out the window with the compromise. But now, Duck, everyone turns up. North supporters yesterday, quarter time, they're 10 goals up against a team that wasn't going to lose a game for the next 7 seasons.
Yeah, it was quite amazing. I was obviously here for the Carlton-Collingwood game, which was another, I guess, mini upset swatter, but I had it on in the background, and 10 goals four to duck eggs for the Crows. And we thought it must have been one of those days down there in Tassie with a real win. They've had some real winning, but it wasn't that at all. They just played some brilliant footy. And Jared Waite once again proves when his body is fit, he is a very, very exciting AFL footballer.
6 snags for Wade. It was a good pickup from North. I'm convinced of that last year. Provided great value up forward along with Benny Brown. But for me, the exciting
Imagine if Carlton had Wade. Betts and Gallant.
All those guys are in career best form.
Imagine if they were all back at Carlton. That'd be knocking on the door for the eight.
It's scary. The exciting thing for me is what looms this final series, because, Roosie, it just seems to be such an open race. And I reckon whoever comes in that last month or last 6 weeks sort of with the best injury sort of rate in form could really go all the way. I mean, even West Coast, there's some danger sides, I think, who, again, like the Western Bulldogs last year, could win it. We're not seeing that real dominance at the very pointy end.
No, I agree. I think that era of dominance, I'm not going to say it's over, because I think we all believe the Giants have got an extraordinary good list, and they're going through a bit of a run of injuries at the moment. But I think once they get their absolute A-grade team back in, their certainly talent level is still very high. But look, it is great. It's exciting to come to the football and watch. I think prior to the season starting, we probably would have had two of North, Hawthorn and Sydney in the eight. Yep. So you've got two extra spots that we probably didn't think existed. Now, that generally happens, maybe one or two, but I think that really opens up for a lot of those teams. Melbourne playing today, St Kilda, great win on Friday night. I would have thought going into the season only one of those two could make it. I think now possibly both of them can make it, given Hawthorn, Sydney and North Melbourne's demise. It's great to be able to go to the football and also project a little bit forward and say, Yeah, who is going to win the flag?
So you reckon the first loss for the Adelaide Crows yesterday has just brought them back to the pack a bit, Jay?
Well, I just don't think they were clearly the standout. And as Ruzi just said with GWS, I think you look at the whole top eight and it's not that clear for me.
West Coast can win a flag, can't win here.
I think there's some danger in the back half of the eight.
Tag is back in vogue. Gibson doing a job on Sloan in Tasmania.
Someone decided to tag him, Duck.
Well, wow.
Finally.
It is amazing how these little vogues. If you've got a tagger, use it. Mm. Use him. Simple as that.
I mean, you were here yesterday too, Duck, I think. Oh. I mean, I'm loath to criticise coaches because I understand how difficult it is. I mean, it's a very, very difficult job. But it was inconceivable to think that Levi Greenwood went to Selwood last week and tagged him. Yeah. And I would have thought the happiest man at the MCG yesterday was Mark Murphy, because I would have thought he would have been thinking all week, oh, here we go. I haven't been tagged for a year and a half. I'm going to get Levi Greenwood. It's going to be a dirty day. And then he looked over and Levi was sitting on the bench and he would have gone, I'm going to get 30 today. Yep, and how many did he get? He got 30.
It was excellent. It was staggering that, because Greenwood was playing on the half forward flank. Why, Ruzi? Why wouldn't have Bucks done that? It's so hard to comprehend.
Look, it is. And as I said, I hate to criticise coaches. And let's be clear, it's a coaching panel, so it's not necessarily Nathan's ultimate decision. I always felt the match committee, you know, you had to make sure you respected the other opinions of the coaches, and often you would get outvoted on things. If it was a 50-50, then generally the assistant coaches would say, Ruzi, look, you whatever you want to do, if you want to tag or if you want to pick this particular player. But if it was 6-1 and you were the one, you'd go with. So I don't know who made that decision within that coaching group, but all I can tell you that Mark Murphy, Pat Cripps, maybe a Simpson who's done really well, a Doherty off a half back flank has been outstanding. Those guys would have been rapt to see Levi Greenwood play off the bench and not run with anyone.
So if you were coaching now, Ruzi, and you had a legitimate Levi Greenwood tag at your disposal, would you assign him a run-with role every week, or would that depend on the team that you were playing? Because it's almost as if coaches are loath to assign one dedicated player, like we saw last week with Joel Selwood, but the result was outstanding.
I think it's the type of players. A couple of things. It's your team, how your team plays defence. Yeah, because teams are loath to do it now. But if you've got more of an 18-man defence as opposed to a one-on-one, it's also around the type of player. You know, at Melbourne, we certainly did it in year one and two. You know, with different players, teaching them how to. It's good for young guys to teach them how to win balls.
I reckon you sent Viney a few times.
We sent Viney to Selwood 2 years ago when we won down at Cadinia Park.
Yes.
It's a great educational tool. It is a little bit harder when you are trying to assign positions on your defensive structure as opposed to more of a one-on-one. You know, there's still some one-on-one teams. So there's a little bit different there. But clearly, I suppose Greenwood I've always seen, and I haven't seen him a lot, but I've always seen Greenwood as a very good stopper and ball winner. You know, I was fortunate to coach Brett Kirk, who was as good as anyone at finding the ball and stopping a man. And I've always seen Greenwood a little bit like that. So I think his best football swatter is played, correct me if I'm wrong, has been played as that run-with player. Even against Selwood, he had 16 or 17 touches last week.
They would have just quite simply yesterday looked at Carlton and said, we'll take him on head-to-head. Mm. We've got a better midfield and we'll beat him like that. Clearly, that was their mindset.
Didn't work.
It didn't work out yesterday. Carlton defeated Collingwood by 23 points. It was the third game due to the Anzac Day situation for Collingwood in the last 12 days, and Nathan Buckley brought up that very point up in the press conference post-game.
It does surprise us because we expect more than that, but logic would tell you that with a couple of short breaks in a row and a lot of our decision-making was around trying to look at the last three-week period, see that in the schedule and go, OK, we're going to need fresh legs as often as we possibly can and see if we can get that. But we just look like we'd lost a yard today. So how much impact that had, I don't know.
Well, yes, it clearly would have had an impact. Got absolutely no doubt about that. Ruzi, you would know a lot better than us. But the issue is Collingwood can't have it both way on this one, boys, because they take the money from Anzac Day and it's a big revenue spinner. But they requested, this was their number one fixture request going back to September last year. Gary Peart asked for this game to be played on Saturday, May 6th to help celebrate the 125th year celebration. So because they played the Anzac Day game, what was it, on a Tuesday? Then they played Geelong last week Sunday. On the Sunday, and then a six-day break in this. So really, they're a fair bit to blame. It's their responsibility on here if they're asking for this game to be played on that. And then, you know, throughout the week, you hear that the president, Eddie McGuire, is having an all-of-staff meeting, a whole-of-club meeting, talking about the importance of this weekend and the 125th-year celebrations. You just wonder, lads, does that play? Is that a distraction? Does it play on the players' minds? Can that be a negative thing? Or we an extra pressure, Duck? We have to win this weekend, by the way. Everything hinges on it.
Oh, look, only the players can answer that. I can't speak on behalf of how they were feeling. But clearly, Eddie, you know, and I don't have a problem with the president of the footy club
getting
everyone together and saying that, you know, it's a big night for the footy club. And, well, in the end, I'm sure it was a big night. It just probably wasn't as happy as what it could have been, Roosie.
Somber.
Listen, you blokes are the stars of the game. You can't tell me professional footballers, JC, that live, eat and breathe are going to be put off their game by the president saying they really need to win this week.
Not everybody eats, lives and breathes it.
Do you seriously consider the president saying to them it's important, we hate this team, we've got to beat them, he's going to put extra pressure on a bloke?
Job, right? No. So the president calls in the administration and the people. Where you've got to get the balance right, Roosie, is that if Eddie emphasises the importance of this game and the result and what it means for this football club, does that permeate its way back to the players by other staff? The coach needs to balance and make sure that the players' focus is on the performance and the structure and the execution. And if there's a slight sign of players being influenced, then I'd like to think that mature ones wouldn't be, but maybe younger ones are distracted. It's about the performance and the win. What comes after that is the bonus, good, bad, or otherwise.
You don't try any harder.
No,
because you've had a meeting with the president during the week.
I can't see how it can make any difference. But you guys have all played the game. At
my
the
point
level.
Is more around the fixture. If you're, and this is not just about Collingwood, this is about the AFL, this is about everyone. If your primary responsibility is to win games of football, prepare yourself to play football, you shouldn't be asked by your club, if it's self-inflicted, Jay-Z, like you said, if you shouldn't be asked to play, how many games? Three games.
Three in 12, yeah.
In 12 games. Because what is more important, raising revenue or winning games of football? Now, I would argue if you win games of football, your revenue raising is covered. So that's and it's hard when you're coaching. I think Nathan, as best he could, let the cat out of the bag that perhaps he wasn't that keen on the draw. Is that correct?
That is quite clear.
And his job as a coach is to get his team ready. I agree. It shouldn't matter whether it's 125 years. It shouldn't matter whether you're playing, you know, the bottom team at the worst venue. What your job as a coach is, what your job as a player is to get yourself ready to play. If that's the ultimate priority, then you shouldn't be asking for a draw that raises revenue.
Compromises that.
They've had a Friday night game. They had a Friday night game in Sydney, two or three weeks ago?
Yeah.
They could have quite easily flown back on the Saturday morning and had that function on that Saturday night.
I think they wanted to play off the rivalry. And I think it's worth making the point that it was a great celebration of the 125 years and all the veterans.
Did they name
guys
a top 10 or
that.
Anything?
There was in the Sunday Herald Sun today, the top 25.
Eddie McGuire spoke last night at the function, and I thought he spoke really well about the importance of yesterday's game, but what the entire 125 years meant for the footy club.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight is about 125 years of our club. Not an afternoon, not a premiership, not a loss, but what this club stands for in the community, what it means to every person in this room.
I think that, Jay-Z, was a really good way to spin it round. He then got up on stage. Now, I like entertainment, Roosie. You've sort of started to gather that with me. I like entertainment in my athletes. I like a bit of showtime. And Eddie provided a bit last night because they had a full, to me, looked like a symphony orchestra style set up. And Eddie got up there on stage with microphone in hand, Jay-Z, a bit like
Don't
the voice style set up.
He didn't sing.
Well, you just need to listen. Quite hitting the high notes, not that I can sing. Thanks to Channel 7 for that audio. We'll never be able to put that out of our ears again.
This is the difficulty with the function, though. And I can tell you, you know who the most disappointed people at that function would have been? The players and the coach that represented that football club yesterday.
Mm, yep.
Because I agree with what Eddie's saying. It's not about that particular day. But try telling the players that. Try telling Nathan Buckley that. Because if you've got a big function on that night, I don't know whether you're still playing, Swatter. We had a big function, Sydney, down here. We played against Carlton. You probably retired by then. We played against, got smashed. It's a shocking feeling. Melbourne had a really big function after we beat Hawthorn 2 years ago. Lost to Hawthorn 2 years ago. It's a shocking feeling. So it's very, very difficult to, on one hand, to say it's not about for the president to get up, and then rightly so. What Eddie is trying to say is it's not, but it's hard to tell that to the players. Now, does that put extra pressure on? I don't know. I'm a bit like Duck. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But I can guarantee they would have been, Scotty Pendlebury, devastated last night.
Yep.
Nathan Buckley, devastated last night. Because you feel like you have let the club down on that particular occasion, which is a big, big night for the football
Spot
club.
Spot on. And I don't know the players were really flat yesterday with their performance.
The MC last night of the Collingwood function has stormed into the box and wants the right of reply. He's at name, and funnily enough, he works at Triple M. He's Brian Taylor. Hello, Brian. How's the night?
Get it right, you guys. you just love canning it. Roosey, you would love to be able to celebrate with your previous club 125 years of history, but you can't. Swatter, you weren't at one club long enough.
We beat Collingwood on our 125th, Brian.
This has nothing to do with the Carlton and Collingwood game from yesterday. This is celebrating 125 years of success at the Collingwood Football Club. So people went there with that in mind. They didn't go in mind, oh, gee, we got beaten by Carlton yesterday. It's going to be a terrible night. They went there saying, hey, we've been alive for 125 years. We've got a great club. We've got better history than any other club in the competition. And we had a great night. Delta was there belting it out. Eddie, as you played before, belted out the tune early on.
How did you think that sounded, Brian?
It sounded not as good as I thought it was.
I agree. So all of that. And then right at the end, they said, but we're crap.
What?
You celebrated 125 years, said how good we are, and we've done all of that, and then right at the end of the night you said, but we're crap.
We've played that song more than any other team in the history of the game.
But we're crap.
And by the way, so Roosie, just to give you the details of the night.
You got him, Duck. He shifted his conversation to Roosie now.
125
He's conceding, Duck.
There's 125 legends at the Collingwood Football Club. There are, half of them have since passed away. There's 59 living legends, right? And of those, 42 were at the club last night. When you consider guys like Lou Richards, who are not going to be able to be there, age, all that sort of thing, 42 of 59 was a great result. They were introduced to the crowd. The crowd loved it. And guess what? They forgot about the team that represented Collingwood yesterday, because that was a very, 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 in fact, an insignificant part of the night.
All right, Brian, we appreciate you coming.
I'm only being facetious.
I've just about had a gut for you. You're always right. You're never wrong. You write articles that don't make sense. All that sort of stuff.
Did they name a top 25 last night?
No.
Brian.
It's just got nothing to do with 25. It's 125 years, not 125 players.
Brian, just before we let you go, there was some concern in the box on Triple M on Friday night. We were watching you do your magnificent walk around down there in the Bulldogs room, which I think is now a highlight of the broadcast.
Yeah,
but there was some concern that your hair looks a different colour than the way it started.
Must have been the lightest.
It's seasonal, Howie.
Right.
It happens once
there
a year.
There was a concern that there was maybe a chestnut rinse going through your
hair,
Brian.
The blue kicker.
Must have been the lighting.
Right.
So, because my hair has not been touched ever.
Rubbish.
Brian, is that the truth?
That's the truth.
The movie appearance? Brian?
Thank you to Brian. We will now go.
Not many people have won a Coleman and been in a movie.
Thank you, Brian. The coach of the Gold Coast Suns is on the line after defeating Geelong last night by 25 points. I'm sorry you had to listen to that, but Rocket Eat is on the line from the Gold Coast. G'day, Rocket.
Hi, Howie. How are you, mate?
Great to speak to you. Not only did you win last night, but I watched your game on telly. You tell me, but not only did you win the game, but you answered challenges time and time again. As a coach, I would have thought that must have been very pleasing. Congratulations.
Thanks. I think that was probably the most pleasing thing. Obviously, being a young side, resilience at times has been fluctuating. But I think we started off a little bit slow the first 10 minutes, but then we're able to grab the ascendancy, and then they challenged the third quarter and then again the last quarter, and be able to answer that was probably the most pleasing thing for us.
Hey, Rocket, going back to round one, it was a really bad start to the season. Have you been surprised with how well the group have responded after a disappointing start in that opening game?
No, not really. Probably the round two was more disappointing. Round one, we won every KPI and we just couldn't put the score on the board. It was just a slow start the first 20 minutes, which was the difference in the end. But the group a fairly tight group. I suppose as a coach, what you judge on is the way they go about their training and what they the attitude they bring to the track during the week, and that's been terrific. So, now we just had to bounce back round three. We did, and had a couple of close losses, but I think last night was probably vindication for the effort they've been able to put in, and just be able to develop some belief and trust in each other.
Congrats on the win, Rocket. When I watch Gold Coast games, I'm just so focused on Tom Lynch because he's just such a star of the game. But we know about his contested marking. What about his work rate? Have you seen a young key forward, been in footy a long time, sort of work and produce second and third efforts like he does?
No, I think that's probably his trademark, obviously, his marking. But he's got a big tank as well. He'll push up to half-back and then beat his opponent back to the goal square. And probably at times I've spoken to him about having his second, third efforts consistently. And probably our forward pressure has been an area that we've really focused on as a whole group. And I think he's led the way in that the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I think he's taken upon himself to actually drive that area of the ground. And but he is a competitive bugger, and he loves a contest and gets frustrated when things don't go well for him. But from our point of view, he's still got a little bit to learn. I know that's probably scary for some people, but I think there's a bit of an upside for him as well.
Rocket, having learned a lot from you over the time I was assistant, I reckon one of your greatest strengths was taking two or three things away from the opposition. So when you looked at Geelong, what were maybe a couple of things that you felt, if we can do this really well and take this away from them, that you'd give yourself a chance to win?
Well, I suppose, we took a little bit out of Collingwood last week. So we had Barlow, who did it really well last year for Freo, be able to run with Selwood. Selwood still had 24, but we didn't think he'd influence as much as what he's had in the past against us. And he got 40-odd last year. We really wanted to work out our kicking patterns where we kick the ball. We think teams defend different parts of the ground differently. We thought if we could shorten our kicks at between the arcs rather than sort of run and carry a bit, maybe give us a bit more scope to be able to go inside 50 a little bit better. So I think we executed that pretty well.
I think Jared Harbour, our mate, he's been an unbelievably consistent player. Probably one, I guess you're a bit sick of, probably like me with Jack Watts, you get sick of talking about Gary Ablett. And a lot of times when you have a player like Gazza, a lot of the other players miss out, I guess, on the limelight or miss out on the recognition. But tell us a bit about Harbrow and how important he is to your team.
Yeah, well, he was running up best and fairest last year, and having coached him at the Bulldogs and seen him a fair bit in his career, I thought last year was his best year. Missed the first 2 weeks because he came off ankle reconstruction, but he was as vital as anyone from round three when we played Hawthorn. And probably those 5 games, he's probably been in our best 3 or 4 for 4 of them. Just he's playing with a looks like a fair bit of freedom. He's attacking the ball. He's a good mark for his size, and just now with Saad as well, just to take a bit of pressure off him, be able to break the lines and open up for us. And I think his experience helps. I think at some stage we've probably been very young and maybe too young, and I think just having that bit of experience back, which his leadership's quite vital for us back there.
Rocket, you mentioned resilience earlier. What about Gary Ablett? And his name just came up then with Roosie, because he seemed to have a bit of a shoulder niggle at half time. He's a guy who's been criticised in the past for, not playing with injury that well in the past. But how proud were you of him to go out in that second half and continue to play a key role?
Was that a recruiting drive for you, Jay, to get him back to Geelong, is it?
Oh, I think partly, Rocket. That's fair to say. Well, how is his shoulder? Can you just talk me through how that went?
He crunched in a tackle from Dangerfield, I think, and he'd landed on it. So it's a bit like a stinger, I suppose. He got a bit of pain through it. But at halftime, got the all clear. And as you can see, his form in the second half was pretty good. But he's woken up pretty well today, so
he's okay.
Really no worries about him playing this week.
Yeah. Rocket, congratulations, mate. Really happy for you. It must be good to have a good complement of your squad to pick from. Obviously, Swallow back in that side played a really good game again. But also the professionalism in the game, and now all of a sudden you've got professional facilities. How big a difference has that made to the team? And just the way they, I guess, feel about themselves also.
Yeah, it's a big thing, Duck. I mean, the facilities are fantastic, and probably every club I've been at, from the Swans, they got new facilities just when I was there, then the Bulldogs, and then Collingwood got revamped. And I would think these facilities probably make more of a difference than the other clubs because of where the of the previous facilities we had, where they were really archaic and basic. It was really, really horrible. And I think the players have been there for the 6 or 7 years, like Lynch and Matera and these sort of guys, May, are really appreciating because they're just really actually doing things in tin sheds before. So it's obviously helped with recruiting, with retention, but I think as far as being professional and because you're preaching professionalism all the time, but if we as a club or as a coaching group aren't providing that, the players can be actually become a bit sceptical. So I think it's had an influence. It's had a had a big positive effect, and hopefully that that can keep going.
Ruzi, I was watching your man Steve-O on Channel 7 this morning, and he can turn the greatest positive into the world's biggest negative. You're off to China next week. He was reporting the weather to be hot, smoggy, and chance of sandstorms. Now, you being one of the great world travellers, you must be looking forward to getting over there. We're still trying to sort out Duck's got a visa issue, which is slowing us down at the moment. But how are you feeling about going over to China?
I have to the political line, don't I? There's, now we're looking forward to it. I think the biggest issue. I think it's great for the game. We're able to go and play for points away and all that sort of thing. Just you can't get a direct flight there. You know, by the time we leave here, catch a bus to Brisbane and be there a couple of hours early, it'll be about 21 hours by the time we get there. So that's going to.
So logistically, it's quite difficult, is it, Rocket?
It is going to be. Yeah, and. Not many players are in business, so an exit rows and all that sort of thing. So the tall players, so that's probably more my concern is the preparation of the players and then coming back as well. Even though we've got the bye the next week, so that smog you talk about, hopefully there's no respiratory problems. We won't take any players who have got asthma or have got some respiratory problems anyway. So so that'll have to be all decided on Tuesday. So there may be some changes before we go.
So you've got players flying economy to China, you're telling me?
I'm telling you exactly right, yes.
Wow.
Hey, Rocket, you obviously, you had a fair bit of success at Sydney, and I remember in the hallways when I was playing with Craig O'Brien looking at old photos of the Swans, he said, look, we're trying to build our culture. You've come from a club at North that had strong culture. You've taken that experience and you're now coaching the Gold Coast Suns, which is an emerging market, but not a traditional AFL heartland. So not only are you coaching, but how important and how difficult and how challenging is it to create culture at a startup club with some young kids that you're now coaching?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Obviously, it's well documented some issues that confronted them the first year with off-field and a whole range of different distractions. But I think we've actually curbed all that, created an area or an environment which is pretty professional. The players are driving that, which is what we're trying to educate on. I suppose when you've got such a young group, them being able to drive that to the degree you want is still a work in progress. That's why getting some experienced players like Barlow and Rosa and coming out of good environments really help, really assist. And they're assisting May and Lynch as being captains. But I think the culture aspect, I think we're developing pretty well. I think that's going well. Now we just need to develop that harder edge as a team, that sort of ruthlessness that you find teams in Melbourne that have been in existence for 100 years that have got that and the successful teams have. So that's a thing that we'll now obviously strongly focus on over the next 12 months or 2 years.
Rod, just before we let you go, mate, who has got an asthma problem or a respiratory problem who you might be concerned about from the playing group?
Why is it just so you can write in the paper, mate? No, we'll keep that quiet and see how we go, Joe.
He doesn't miss Howie.
He doesn't. I like it. Rocket, we really appreciate your time. Well done at beating the Cats. And good luck with your trip to China. Maybe bring us all back a souvenir or two.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Good luck, Rodney.
Good on you, Rocket.
I mean, that's crazy. Extraordinary. That's crazy. Extraordinary.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Not direct. Bus down to Brisbane. Economy class.
That
tickets.
Is ridiculous.
How would you feel if you were coaching in that setup?
I can't believe there's even a game on based on what Rocket said then. That is ridiculous.
Jay-Z. A bit of a story out of the Swans and a lot of injury news as well from yesterday's game.
Yeah, Aaliyah, the young key defender, was a late withdrawal, Howie, and pretty disappointing because he missed training yesterday. So the Swans had an early morning session. I think it was 9 a.m, a swim, some goal kicking, some training, etc. And he wasn't there. So Tom Harley, the Sydney football manager, said the club can't stand for that. It pulled him out of today's game. Now, we believe he just sort of slept through his alarm clock and, you know, it was just one of those sleeping type issues. Yeah, so not a lot of malice.
Even when he got dropped a couple of weeks ago, Roosie, I was really surprised that he got dropped. I didn't think his form was warranted being dropped then either, Jay-Z.
Yeah, I don't know that it sort of goes back any further than that, Duck, but it's an interesting point. Are you guys, Roosie, you happy with that? Like, if a player misses training, would you rule him out of the game? It must be a really tough one. And does it depend who the player is? Like, if it's a star?
I mean, you don't want players missing training, do you? I mean, look, I think we're speculating on the circumstances. You know, you're saying he slept through the alarm.
If you sleep in, and that's and look, we've all slept in at some point in time. And you're right. If it was a star, I've never been late to training, squad ever.
Sure. What are you looking at me for?
I just noticed you sort of look. But we've all slept in at some point.
Kangaroo boys.
If it was a star, if it was the captain of the footy club and he rang up and said, oh, look, I've slept in, he wouldn't be dropped.
No.
Having slept in, it's a terrible feeling.
I was just going to say
that. It's a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
And even made worse when you turn up to the Ascot Vale Leisure Centre and there's the coach with a whiteboard waiting for you to get out of the car. I ripped you a Newey.
Can I tell a quick duck story?
Clear the decks.
Mick Martin, I'll never forget, I slept at his house one night.
Do his voice.
I got up in the morning, as I do, as you guys notice here, I'm always early. Yep. Get everywhere fairly early. Anyway, I slept in, got up. I said to Mick, woke Mick up. I said, Mick, we've got training this morning. I drove home, got my gear ready, had a shower, got to training, and then we're halfway through training. Mick's still not there. And he walks in, and we're swimming laps. And I remember being at the end of the pool, and I look up, and I see Mick walk in. And I look over, and I see Pago with steam coming out. So they're meeting halfway, and Mick just looks at me. I'm in the pool with my goggles on, with a big smile on my face, because I know he's going to get into trouble. Mick just looks at me and goes, you shouldn't have woken me up. I said, I did wake you up. I woke you up about 5 hours ago, Mick, and you went back to sleep. He blamed me.
Injury concerns, Jay-Z, plenty of them yesterday. I guess the most significant one from last night was Jake Stringer when he grabbed his knee and didn't take any further part.
Yeah, two at the Dogs, so we're waiting the scans at the moment, Howie. But I guess at the moment it was sort of feeling that it's not ACL, which is good news for Jake Stringer. I think we've got the grab from Jake Stringer, who went to the clinic this morning, and we'll hear from him now.
Feels all right. Wait and see. I still have no idea, so yeah, we'll wait and see. Go see the doctors in a couple of hours and yeah, we'll get a verdict. Well, we obviously fear for the worst, and then I was a bit relieved when they took me down and they said that they didn't think it was an ACL, so obviously, you know, the relief was there, but I still got to wait and see what I got first.
So if he's tweaked the ligament, it might be a couple of weeks there for Jake Stringer, best case scenario.
Said it feels all right. Did you see the vision of him?
He went down like
the vision of him walking in to get the scan.
Oh, he looked so sore,
He could hardly walk.
Oh, really? No, I didn't see
that.
And then they stopped him. He said, yeah, it feels all right.
Quickly, any other injuries, Jay-Z?
Well,
there was a couple yesterday.
Yeah, Josh Dunkley from the Bulldogs. He's dislocated his shoulder. Could be out for months, Howie. And Tom Hickey hurt his knee, the Saints star ruckman. He's been playing in the VFL. Billy Long was not bad the other night, but he's having some scans on his knee, and that could be bad news. Paddy McCartan, for charging in the VFL yesterday. He faces an MRP charge. He might be out for a week or two with that.
Boys, we get some big-name guests in this box, but none at the level of the lady I'm about to introduce. A 7-time Commonwealth Games gold medalist, 3-time Olympic silver medalist, a one of 100 national living treasures in this country, a lady that's fought breast and ovarian cancer and beaten it 3 times, and just one of the superstars of the planet for mine. Her name is Raylene Boyle. G'day, Raylene. Wonderful, wonderful to see you.
Thanks, guys. Lovely to be here.
Just tell us a little
introduction.
Well, it is, but you deserve an introduction like that and all more.
He doesn't. I've never heard him give one like that,
and
Raylene,
he's on his knees with
you.
His head down.
Listen, I went to Athens with Raylene, and I watched her work, and I was amazed and astounded by what this lady did. And if you bring in pink finger buns, Duck, like she has, that's given us all lift. Great to see you. Tell us a little bit about today and the Pink Lady match, Raylene.
Well, the Pink Lady match, we've been doing I can't remember. Can you remember how many years?
Well, I remember I did it in Sydney. When
10
we
years.
At, yeah, it's been a while. I can't 10 remember years. What year that was, but we did it out at, I can never remember what that venue's called, but out at ANZ Stadium, whether it's still called that. So that was a long, that was Sydney.
Seven years ago.
Yeah, so, and Melbourne have been doing it for a while now.
Yeah,
so it's
and
that's
great. It brings profile to the organisation I'm involved with, Breast Cancer Network Australia, which is the Pink Lady organisation. Our job is to look after the women when they're diagnosed with breast cancer. So that crosses a whole lot of boundaries, you know, sending out kits, information kits to the women, linking them together so they don't feel alone, so that they've got someone to talk to on the same level, lobbying for stuff that we need, new drugs. I mean, there's amazing new drugs out there that can save lives, unbelievable new drugs. We have to lobby the government to make sure we get them onto the PBS, because without that, the women are paying something like $60,000, $70,000 a year to keep themselves alive. You know, not many people can afford that. I've heard of women selling houses and giving up lots of stuff so that they can keep themselves alive in the hope that these drugs are going to go onto the PBS. So it's a real cross-border. It's the rules and regulations of how you should be treated once you're diagnosed with breast cancer.
And it's something that touches so many people and so many families. You can support the BCNA and Australians affected by breast cancer by SMSing PINK, that's PINK, to 0437 371 371. Get your pen out. I'll give it to you again in a moment. Or visit bcna.org.au. That's 0437 371 371. Raylene, I'll ask you a reasonably personal question, but I know that you're so open about this. You've dealt with cancer three times. What's the hardest thing about fighting cancer?
Look, you know, we've heard a lot in the last few weeks, and we've seen a lot with the Grant Hackett situation, of people falling off the plank after they finish their career,
yep.
And they've got nowhere to go, and they haven't been prepared properly. When I was an athlete, I was prepared very well for life after my sport. I was told by my coach, Ron Dewhurst, when I ran on the 4th of October back in 82 at the Com Games, that was the last race I was ever going to run. So I had the preparation for that. He made sure I bought a house, a dog, and made sure I had employment. Mm-hmm. So he had been moving me into my new life as well as training me for a major last competition. I fell off the plank after I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go. There was nowhere to go. My doctor didn't talk to me. He talked to my breast. He didn't explain anything to me. He said, I'm doing surgery on it. And you might have to do chemo and radiation. Well, what's chemo and radiation going to do to my body? I had no rights back then to ask questions, I felt.
Right.
This organisation gives you rights. What happened then was, I was diagnosed 21 years ago, 19 years ago, Lynn Swinburne was introduced to me and told me what she had as a concept for breast cancer to help. And she gave me purpose again. So she put me in a position where I had a direction, something to do that was going to make what happened to me good. And that's why my plank falling off only lasted a couple of years.
I think that's a good thing, Raylene, about the lunches that I've been to and we've shared together. It's just the connection in the room, you know, whether it be the husband going through it with the wife, the son, the daughter, the cousin. And that's really the big part of what they do, isn't it? Just trying to give yourself a connection. And as an athlete, we've all had, you know, doctors looking after us, people looking after us the whole time. You barely have to bring your boots. We had a boot star that bring the boots to the game. So, but that's the connection, isn't it, of a foundation like this, giving the support and giving a connection, which then gives some peace of mind.
Look, you're absolutely right, Rizzi. It's instead of floundering in space somewhere and not knowing what the hell to do, where to go, you know, no one around you understands because they haven't been through a cancer, you are connected up, you are given information how to manage what you're going through, you're given information about what questions to ask, suggestions of what questions you could ask your doctor. There's also brochures and information kits for the family around you. The last thing you should ask anyone who's just had a cancer or a major illness is, how are you? For God's sakes, look at me, I'm dying. You know, it sounds so insignificant, but it's important.
Mm. Hey, Raylene, there may be women or families that are just beginning the journey that you've been through three times. What would be the best bit of advice you could give to somebody who may have the oh shit moment, now what am I going to do, how do I deal with this situation?
In today's world, you've got every right to ask every question you want to ask. Ask questions. And don't reflect backwards. look forwards. You know, you've done three chemos, say. Forget them, they're done. Look forward to the fourth, and then the fifth and the sixth. Looking backwards, it's like if you run a bad race. And if you keep dwelling on that, you're never going to move forward. Mm. You're going to get to a certain point in the race every time you put your foot on the track where you go, oh, my God, this is where it happened. You know, this is where I nearly fell over or someone ran past me and I couldn't react. Look forward and react to what's happening in front of you. Ask questions. Don't go into things blind. Because really, it's up to the individual to make the decision about their life, whether they do want to do it that way or they don't want to do it that way. And the way I'm saying is the conservative road that we promote. You know, you're given the chemo and particularly the targeted treatment these days that will save your life in more instances than not.
Once again, SMS pink to 0437 371 371. That's 0437 371 371 or visit bcna.org.au. Raylene, you'll have to come and join us again at some stage because it's always a treat. We don't have enough time to spend with a delightful lady like you. Good luck with the lunch and good luck with everything going forward. Wonderful to see you as always.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for being interested.
Great to have a superstar of Australian sport.
A living national treasure.
One of only 100, and that list was done a while ago,
Living's good.
Not sure how many of the 100 are left, but Raylene, he's got another 50 or 60 in it. Don't worry about that. Great to have Raylene Boyle here. We'll go down to the boundary to a man that's 60 as well, but looks 23. His name is Mickey Roberts. Robbo.
Thanks, Howie. I tell you, I've got a treasure in football world, and that's Brett Ratten with me. Five years at Hawthorn now. It's gone pretty quick, but gone the other way, the Hawks. No major omissions. The fact that you've gone the other way and you've whacked Grant Birchall and Cyril Rioli back in the side. Great returns for the club.
Yeah, it is. Cyril's performance against West Coast here was outstanding. And we've missed Birch. You know, he's a great counter-attack defender. He defends really well and gives us good rebounds. So to have him back is really important for us.
Now, Rats, we've been through club life, the highs and lows. And look, if the players know it's coming, if you have major beltings like 86 twice and 75, heads will roll. That's motivation in itself to perform in the MCG, isn't it?
Oh, it is. You know, your pride in your performance. So collectively, we need to get better as a team. And it's probably been last week, I suppose, out of the game, there was probably only about 15 minutes that we're really competitive and on top of St Kilda. But outside of that, they were all over us and pretty much dominated the game, whether it was by a lot or a little bit. You know, they just sort of had control of that game really from the first bounce.
Rats, a late change. Jago Mira out again with some knee soreness. Will Langford in. That's a concern. How's Jager going with that knee?
Yeah, he's going okay. It's the knock from the Gold Coast game, so it's a separate incident. He was 100% last week, and he just took a bit of time this week, so we gave him sort of right till probably about 12 o'clock today, and it just wasn't quite ready to go. So, you know, he'll just work on that, and we'll get him back as soon as possible. So
how are you going to manage that for the rest of the year, Rats? Do you feel like the club needs to be sort of extra careful with this guy?
I think we do have to be fairly careful with him. You know, how careful, we just have to work out how he's travelling and make sure that he's pretty much 100% to go, because, you know, he's a long-term investment for us and we don't need to just wheel him out there at 85 or 80% fit. We need to make sure he's right. So we'll look after him.
Hey, Rats, it's unfamiliar territory for a team that's been incredibly successful for a long period of time. You've got a number of guys that have been to the well multiple times, premiership players. Have you had to manage those experienced players differently given the fact that things have noticeably changed with regards to on-field results?
Not a lot. I think you always look back at your values and what you said at the start of the year and where you've been as a club. We've got standards, so we're trying to still meet those standards. You know, we haven't got the wins on the board, but it's probably about the drop-offs in quarters or, you know, 15 minutes where the opposition kick multiple scores. That's the thing for us that we need to control because, you know, at the moment, we're at periods of the game, we're giving up 6, 7, maybe 8 goals in a quarter, and it's just too hard to win from there.
Right. It's even unusual from a commentary point of view, I guess, when you're talking about Hawthorn, because as you well know, I mean, your standards have been so high for so long. So if there is one thing as a commentator or you know, Hawthorn supporter coming to game today, what is the real one non-negotiable that you're really asking your players to get done today?
It'll have to be the contested situation, Ruzi, whether it's us winning the ball or us tackling well. In periods of the game, we haven't done that so well. We haven't won the contested ball, and then if the opposition's had it, we haven't tackled that well and missed tackles or they're broken tackles, and that's allowed the opposition to do what they want to do with the footy, and that'll be where the game is won and lost today, I think.
Yeah, it's certainly hard, isn't it? I mean, if you're not winning in that area of the ground, particularly with you, I mean, you've got a really aggressive defence that takes really good position. But if there's no pressure on the midfield, that dump kick going into your defence, it's very hard for your defenders. Last week, there were so many goals that were kicked over the back by the Saints. So that's obviously something you've spoken heavily about this week.
Yeah, exactly right. We need to get pressure on the ball and make sure that the opposition have to kick over hands and around corners and make it very hard for their forwards and mids to connect with that footy.
Rats Clarko said after last week that there could be some catastrophic change. And yesterday in his press conference, he said that was a wrong choice of words. Did you guys discuss that messaging and what it might send to the players, or were the players concerned with those terms, or what's been the conversation throughout the week about those comments?
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot. It's probably, Al was probably frustrated and used that word, and we haven't been a club that's really made huge changes and reacted, on a whim. It's been calculating and made good measures in regards to our decision making. So, I think he wishes he could take back that word.
Hey, Brett, from a personal point of view, do you have aspirations to take on a senior coaching job in the near future? Is that something that you are still considering, or are you considering? Because who knows, it could be a couple come the end of the year.
Yeah, it's sort of a question when you've been a senior coach and then you fall out. I still got some ambitions in regards to that, but is it going to happen? I don't know. Life for me in the last a couple of years have changed significantly in what you focus on, and for me it would have to be the right situation, but I probably look at life a lot different than I did when I was coaching Carlton.
Brett, we really appreciate your time. Best of luck to you, Clarko, and the Hawthorn Footy Club today taking on the Demons.
Good on you, fellas. Take care.
Great to speak to Brett Ratten, the assistant from the Hawthorn Football Club.
I'm glad you asked it, Duck, because I personally think that he would be a better coach. And I want to ask you a question here, Ruzi. If you were enlisted to be a person on a coaching selection committee, what would you look at with regards to Rats, his own personal experience as senior coach? But he's gone into an unbelievably successful football environment. Surely he'd be at the top of a list, would he not?
Oh, you absolutely would speak to him, because I think we all acknowledge in this business that coaches, and I'm not suggesting Rats in particular, what I'm saying, I think we've seen coaches that have gone in too early, and there's been a number of them that haven't been successful. Now, if you're in that position, you're clearly going to learn something. And then you go back into a different position. And I'm probably talking a bit like Vossi as well. I haven't spoken to Vossi about whether he wants to coach again. But you would have to consider Ratten and Voss. I'm always staggered that the Choco Williams name hasn't come up again. His record is impeccable. So you would have to think that Brett Ratten, if he would like to do it, would have to be someone that you'd want to sit down. And I think what you talk to Rats about, what did you learn? What did you think you did well at Carlton? What could you do better? And I think he'd be a terrific candidate, because his record was actually pretty good when he was at Carlton.
Yeah, exactly right. It was good. And given what the coaches under Clarko that have and how they've gone on. I mean, look at it: Beveridge, Cameron, Fagan, now Bolton. Their systems, Ruzi, they're all standing up. Brisbane, although they're getting absolutely pumped now, just around the ground.
Sydney
60,
duck.
Brisbane Lions 18, halfway through the second quarter. But you can just see the improvement in those sides already. And Brett Ratten, who, like you said, did a pretty good job at the Blues and now done a great apprenticeship in that system, Schwatter. I think he's the most qualified assistant game.
I can tell you the Hawthorn players absolutely love what he brings to the table, Brett Ratten. They are massive, massive fans of him. Something that really caught my ear in that interview is when you said late change. And I was thinking in my head, as someone that follows the Hawks, don't let it be Jager O'Meara. And it was.
Big alarm bell for me, this one, Howie, because in the release also, the club says that they want to make sure he gets back to 100% health before he plays again. And do you know what that might mean? That could be a significant conditioning block. So maybe 3 weeks of training to getting him back up to full health before he's back out there playing footy, Howie. So I'm not sure we'll see Jager O'Meara, not even next week, but maybe a few weeks. I think this is a bit of a reset for him.
Yeah, look, I think with Jager, let's be really clear, because there's been a bit of criticism to Hawthorn about the pick. Now, they didn't know the pick was going to be, and we're still yet to know exactly what's going to be, Jay-Z. But at the moment, it's pick two, I believe, to St Kilda.
Yeah.
But now that's going to play out to the
and
end
others.
Of it. But to be fair to Hawthorn, and I saw this kid play when he was ineligible to play for seniors. He had that 1 year up there. He's a star. Yeah, it's going to take another 12 months. It's going to take another preseason. It's going to take a block of fitness. It's going to take some games, etc. So we won't know how successful this trade's been until the end of next year. Not the end of this year, but the end of next year. And I still hold great hope. This kid, if he gets back to the way he was an absolute jet.
Dale Thomas, I think it is, loose inside 50. Finds him, marks, plays on.
Candy.
Sold foot candy. Took a bounce. Turned him inside out. Double bounce. Right foot sidewinder. Got it. Thomas, big goal against the Pies.
Why the inconsistencies with Collingwood?
It does surprise us because we expect more than that.
Fasolo with the ball at halfback. There it is. Carlton have won their third game of the year by 23 points over their arch rivals.
The message clearly isn't getting through, because how do you go from last week to what they served up today?
Logic would tell you that with a couple of short breaks in a row that we just looked like we'd lost a yard today. So how much impact that had, I don't know.
Day yesterday, Carlton taking on Collingwood, 125-year celebrations, and Carlton got the job done on their arch rivals. Great to have the reigning BNF winner from the Carlton Footy Club on the line by the name of Sam Doherty. G'day, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on. Congratulations on yesterday. You stuck it up the old enemy. Very nice. Well done. You must have enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was. It was a terrific result for our footy club. Obviously, Collingwood celebrating their 125th year, and it's always good to get a win over the old foe, and especially at the G on a Saturday afternoon in front of a big crowd.
Sam, we've watched a bit of you guys play this year, and we had Brendan Bolton on the show the other night too, so it's been fantastic. Just asking you about yourself and Cade, you're really good organisers down back, and I've loved the way you're able to, keep a goalkeeper or whatever, and often you're the first one back, or Cade's the first one back on an opposition turnover. What sort of licence do you guys have to sort of run your own show, in a sense? Leave that half-forward go up to a stoppage, which I think Collingwood did early, and you were just sitting back. So is that something you talk a lot about pre-game, or is that something you make a decision along with Cade? I know he was a bit more wing yesterday, but who directs that?
It's more about the way we play our footy as a group. Obviously, it does that role does sort of sit on myself and Cade's shoulders a fair bit, mainly because we're the smaller of the two, and a lot of high half forwards get up into the stoppage, but we back our midfielders in to put a good contest and some pressure on the footy that it plays into our hands. And obviously, it's not a completely set role. It's just seeing what the opposition give us and making a call out on the ground, whether we need some depth or we need to man up the guy that's having some impact inside the stoppage.
Yeah, congratulations on a good win yesterday, mate. I want to ask you, Marchbank, terrific again yesterday. I think he's the number one intercept marker in the competition at the moment. Obviously got the NAB Rising Star nomination last week, deservedly so. But it makes it so much easier when you guys down there, and as Roosie said, when you guys are marking the footy and winning the footy, that allows your on-ballers to have trust in you guys, knowing that you're going to get... They can then go to where the footy's going. I don't think a Carlton team has had that for quite some time. And I reckon Big Rowie as well is another guy who has gone from just a spoiler to a player now that wins big 50-50 contests and is actually marking the footy really well also.
Yeah, obviously on March, he's a lot of credit needs to go to Rowie and Alex Silvani. They take the big tall brutes of the opposition, which allows Caleb to play that extra in, not really extra, but he plays off his man and he's able to intercept the ball really well. He obviously reads the game really well. And in turn, that does, if you're talking about our midfielders and obviously our halfbacks, if you can get a mark in off an opposition kick these days, it's so important for the way you can move your ball. You can start to react and run to good spots and get to the team on the opposite side of the ground. So we're still developing as a group, but there's some plenty of good signs, especially from some young blokes like Marchbank, Williamson, Charlie Curnow down forward. It's been terrific the last few weeks. So there's a lot to get excited about down the Blues at the moment.
I think the other bookend as well, I agree with Duck on the back end, but I also the forward end. I think Levi Casbolt is such an important player for you. Watching the game yesterday, Sam, he just seems to give you really confidence. He's not a high possession winner. He's obviously straightened up his goal kicking. He can take an unbelievable contested mark, probably the best contested mark in the competition. But how much confidence does he give you just to be able to launch that ball forward to bring the ball to ground as well for your young small forwards?
Yeah, as you said, he's not a high possession player, and the probably the best thing about him this year is when he's getting his opportunities, he's kicking his goals. But for Levi, for us, it's about just making a contest and bringing our smalls into the game. I think you've seen this year that whenever he goes up into a contest, the ball generally comes to ground to the front, which is all you can ask for your key forward, is that at bare minimum the ball comes to ground. And he's doing a terrific job for us at the moment, and he's obviously looking really dangerous down forward. Him and Jacob Wettering are starting to get a bit of a pair together and getting a bit of chemistry down forward as well, which is handy for us.
Hey, Sam, if Daisy Thomas plays like he did yesterday, he's a regular contributor and a immediate selection for your best 22, is he not?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, Daisy had a rest and then played a game down the VFL, and his attitude to go back into the VFL and perform the way he did was a real credit to him as a person and also as a player. Obviously, if he's back playing to his good footy, he's confident. He's a bit of a barometer for us that when he's up and about, where he's really going, it really lifts the group. And it was great to see the reward for not only the effort of what he put in the previous few weeks, but obviously to have a good performance for him personally is really good to see.
Sam, if your mate there, Sam Petrevski-Seaton, doesn't win the Rising Star nomination on Monday, they're going to shut this thing down because he was absolutely outstanding.
Well, Jaden Hunt didn't get one last year, so
that was also unusual. Well, Lewis Taylor won it.
Sorry to interrupt, Sam. It's a bit of a sore point. But go on.
When he first rocked up to the club, Sam, is there something? Can you remember something which he did, or how quickly did he really impress you? Because he looks to be something else, this fella.
Pretty much straight away. As soon as he came in the door, the thing that impressed me the most, and it's generally what impresses me most about the young kids at the moment, is they just want to learn and they want to grasp all the knowledge they can get. And obviously, Samo's got supreme skill, and you can
pressure.
See that when he's playing. And that's the other thing, is his pressure around the ball. He wants to tackle. He wants to be involved in the game. And that's all we can ask for from young fellas, is to show the glimpses of what they're going to bring for the future for our footy club. And he's doing it in spades at the moment, like a lot of the others are.
Be bound by Blue in 2017 and sign up as a member today. All you need to do is jump on carltonfc.com.au to view the range of membership packages on offer. Plenty of them. carltonfc.com.au. Very good time to get on board. We are speaking to the reigning BNF winner, Sam Doherty, on Triple M Football.
Sam, I'm just going to ask you about your preparation. How much time did you spend on Levi Greenwood tagging one of your good players, which may have been you? Did you talk about that pre-game, and were you surprised when he lined up on the pine?
We put a little bit into not so much Greenwood as a tag, as a specific person, but we've got plans around if any of our players get sat on, about a way that we can get around that. And a lot of it does revolve around working really hard and putting the tagger in some uncomfortable positions where they're not too sure what they're doing. But sitting on the pine at the start, but we've done that in the past with Ed Curno, and he starts on the pine and then runs straight onto someone. So not so much around his starting position, but just who he was going to go to, we just no one was really sure. So, but I think he went to Murph for a bit of time and sort of lost his structure there. So he came down forward and, again, lost a bit of structure there. So it's important that if you get sat on to work a way around it. And we did pretty well on the weekend.
Sammy, just as we let you go, what floats your boat away from football? What do you get up to when you're not spending all your time at the footy club?
I'm a big golfer. I'm no good at it. Yeah, all I'm right. Not very good, but I enjoy to get out there and have a hit.
What would you be playing off?
I'm off about 17 at the moment, which is very average for someone that plays every week.
Who's the best down at the Blues?
Dennis Armfield's going very well at the moment. I think he's down to about 9, but he's probably the regular. But a couple of the Irish boys are pretty darn good as well.
All right, Sam, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for having a chat with us, and well done with your win yesterday.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
Great to speak to Sam Doherty. I'm not sure if Dennis Armfield's rolling down to Royal Melbourne, et cetera, that they're giving him a membership straight away, JZ, to be completely honest with you. What do you think, Roosie?
Why are you suggesting that?
Well, he's just sort of a bit scruffy looking. He's got tattoos on the arm. He's got that funny moustache. I don't think he lines up with the Melbourne Golf Club scenario. But anyway, good luck to him. Man's just wandered in and said under his breath, gee, this looks like a bit of a dangerous box. I don't think he'll have any concerns. The CEO of the Melbourne Footy Club, Peter Jackson is here. We're about to stick some headphones on his beautiful head as he joins us now. G'day, Peter. Great to see you. Just whispering. A really big day today. Just firstly, we had just had Raylene Boyle in to talk about the Breast Cancer Network, a passionate, wonderful woman, a woman, and really nice that your footy club has been involved for quite some time now.
11 years now. It's been huge. I think it was probably the first involvement of AFL football with women and promoting women's causes, and they kicked it off all those years ago with a huge field of women, and next year is the 20th anniversary of BCNA itself, so we might do something big then, but it's a great cause, and 17,000 women diagnosed every year with breast cancer, so it's an important issue.
The club was on its knees, Jacko, basically, when you came in. I noticed three consecutive profits since then. I dare say you're about to announce your fourth, and you look out in the field, and there's young star power everywhere. Yep. How do you summarise the transformation at this football club over the past few years?
Oh, it's not hard. It's not rocket science, really. I mean, it's a combination. It's really a question of getting the right people in the organisation. And we had a few really good people sitting in places doing, you know, about to do good things. Todd Viney, Josh Marnie were in footy and doing a pretty good things in an unknown sort of a way, if I can put it that way. Getting someone like your colleague here, Roosie, on board, and he didn't do much while he was there, of course. but what he did was having him around. A guy of his stature and in the first instance just created hope. And so other people prepared to jump on board and get involved, whether they be sponsors, whether they be, you know, people like Simon Goodwin or others putting their hands up and say, well, if these guys are involved in the Melbourne Footy Club, I might be too. So you can start to accumulate a lot of good people, and I reckon that's the secret to it. We've got good people and we let them do their job.
We take the mickey out of Roosie a little bit, but how wrapped were you when you got him on board? Because we saw for months he said, I'm not doing it. I'm not coaching anymore. I'm surfing in Hawaii. Yeah. But do you have a little fist pump or a little celebratory bottle of wine when you finally got him over the line?
Of course. Of course we did. To be serious about it, I didn't really think it was going to happen. We started the process of looking for a coach in anticipation it wouldn't happen. And then it did, so that was great.
How did you make it happen? What do you think was the defining factor, Peter?
Well, I hounded him a lot.
Right.
I wouldn't let him stop thinking about it. We got into a dialogue. In the first instance, I wanted to ask him whether he would do the job, and he said no very quickly. So then we talked about what could we do to start rebuilding Melbourne, and I sort of kept up a dialogue going. And, you know, he got interested, and he looked deeper and deeper, and you know, truckload of money probably helped as well.
Now Roosie's nodding his head.
I think the thing I learned from Peter, and it's, I think a lot of people say what they think other people want to hear. I mean, and it's about selling hope. But to be honest, I think the thing that struck me with Peter is how honest he was around the plight of the club and how bad it was. And probably one of the biggest problems of our industry is there's so many people that don't want to tell the truth. And at the end of the day, that's what I learned from Peter. I mean, it is what it is. You know, you can sugarcoat things and everyone wants to make the eight and everyone thinks their list is better than it is, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that's what I applaud Peter. And it was pretty catastrophic when you first took over without going back.
Oh, It was. We won't talk about that in the past. There's a lot of people involved at that time and I don't think we need to,
no.
But it was not a good environment. I think the other thing about I learned, it took a few months to work it out, that he didn't actually want security. He just wanted the excitement of the challenge. And so you're sitting there talking to people about employment. You're trying to do security and long term, and that was probably scaring him away. He really, Paul, just wanted an opportunity to help set something up and put in a succession plan. It worked very well up there, and it's worked down here.
You must be really pleased, Pete, that and I've been guilty of it, if I'm going to be honest, that I thought that Melbourne didn't represent much back in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, 6 years even further back. It was a club that was on the fringe, that didn't really stand for a great deal. But you look at what the club's done now with the assistance of Roosie, Simon's taken over, you've got a plethora of young kids coming through. The ability to turn the fortunes of the club around, still with a lot of improvement in front of the group and the club, it does represent something now. It's captured what it really means to belong and be part of the Melbourne Footy Club. Is that a fair comment?
I think that's absolutely right. We did a few good things off field, you know, this game today and a few other sort of games, we created that sort of stuff, but we didn't really stand for much in football and people didn't know how we were going to play the game. And I remember Roosie coming in and saying that, and that's been backed up by Simon Good ever since. People will know when they come to footy how we're going to play the game. Now, being young, they're still having their occasional wobbles and falling off that. But, you know, they came out last week in the third quarter and played the way we want to play. And we hope each week they're going to do it, but they're not going to do it every week and every quarter because of how young they are still. But we want to stand for something in terms of the brand of footy we play, which is going to be hard, competitive football. And they're all competitors. They've been drafted that way, traded that way. Every kid that's come into that club or older person that's come into that club is a real, real competitor. And that goes down to Todd Viney and his team of bringing those people into the club.
How important was that extra year, Roosie? And was there ever any doubt that you were going to do the extra year? And was that something you had to be talked into? Or once you were into it, you always knew you were going to do that extra year?
Look, we had a great relationship, Peter and I. And I think it was funny. I think the only time we spoke about it, Peter was, and Josh was at a cafe just across the road from here. And I actually said, well, you need to tell me how you think I'm going, you know. And Peter and Josh basically said, well, mate, don't worry about that. And I said, yeah, that's really important to me. You know, do you think I'm doing a good job? Because there's this sort of, I guess, myth that, you know, was completely, I think it was my option, but it's still really important for the CEO and the football manager to say, yes, we want you to do it. And once I heard that and they were really keen for me to stay on, Glenn Bart was keen for me to stay on, it was never about, and I think Peter and I, we've got a lot in common, but it was never about a coach coming in and turning around this organisation. It was about the CEO, the chairman, the football manager. You can't do it with one person. And I think the players we talked about, I think the players thought, oh, great, we're just going to win naturally now. We've got good CEO, good coach, good assistant coaches. And that was probably the trickle-down effect. Once the players understood that they had the most impact in the organisation, and Peter had fulfilled his obligation as a Josh to get some good Georgie Stone, Benny Matthews, Brett Allison, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I need to be clear that these guys were happy with the direction I was heading in as well.
I think, to answer your question before, I think the biggest shift we've made is that the players actually now know it's down to them. They're the ones that are going to drive this footy club. Roosie said that at his first season launch, and they all looked at him and thought, we thought you were going to come in and part the waters and we're all going to walk through it. And that didn't happen, of course, and everyone looks around and says, well, what's going on? We're not really any better than we were. Well, it's taken a long while looking at the player leadership group, changing the leadership group, building that culture inside the footy department. I think I saw a stat the other day, we've changed 54 players since Roosie started. So that's a hell of a lot of players to change in a short period of time. There's only about 8 or 9 that are still there that were there. So it's a big change, but I think they get it now. It's really them that's going to drive this footy club. That's where it's going to come from.
Hey, Pete, Melbourne have 2 games this year in a state which you've sold, one into Alice, one into Darwin. We had the extraordinary conversation with Rocket E. They've got a game next weekend in China. It's a 20-hour indirect flight. If the AFL came to you as a football club and said to you, here's a pile of cash, would you entertain that idea? Is that something that your organisation would sit down, given the logistical nightmare that that's going to be for the Gold Coast Suns and, by extension, Port Adelaide?
Well, we did look at it. I'm not sure we were ever a serious chance of doing it from other people's point of view. But we made a decision pretty quickly we wouldn't do it. It was when we found out that the AFL would sure it had to be in May. I mean, you might have done it round one, had a, you know, start the season early, had a bye, get it all sorted out, but it was never going to work that way. So in May, it's not something we wanted to do. Alice Springs is a game. It's not really different to going to Brisbane. You know, the weather's about the same up there. The flight's about the same. That's relatively easy. Darwin puts a bit more pressure on. There's no doubt about that. But we do have to fulfil our obligations to be financially sustainable as well. We just can't walk away from that fact. And the money we get from those two games is equivalent to about a 60,000 crowd out here. And if you haven't got those games, you haven't got them. So, you know, hopefully over a long time we can build this club so, you know, we can make our own independent decisions entirely. But I think that would have been a bridge too far from us, even if they'd invited us to go. I don't think we would have done it.
We were discussing that exact thing, though, Roosie, previously, and we were saying that as you become a better team and you start to play finals footy, obviously more important that you don't give up those sorts of games away.
Also, it's also your biggest driver of revenue. That's where all your revenue comes from, is winning games of footy
and
playing
finals.
That's
exactly right.
So that's the thing that's going to drive it. So
as you become better, that will become less.
Well, we have a commitment inside our club, and that is we won't compromise the preparation of our football team. Whatever we do, we will not do anything else that will compromise them My own personal view, I mean, Port Adelaide and Gold Coast make their decisions, but I have that view, and whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know, but that's I've got to make the decision. I made it.
Going back to the pre-season, Pete, you cleared, the medical staff cleared Heredia Mamumba of any concussion issues, yet he pulled the pin. Were you surprised at the time? From the outside, seemed a very weird situation.
Yeah, probably we were, to be fair about it. We thought that was unusual, but, you know, he did that and it's been resolved and we all move on. Heredia moves on, we move on. That's the end of it as far as I'm concerned.
Pete, just before we let you go, I really enjoyed this article with Jaden Hunt in the Herald Sun by Sam Landsberger today. I don't know if you've read it, but I need to bounce a quote off you that really struck me, where he says, "Yes, I'm a quirky guy," he said. "If you can explain this to me, I can see why you're CEO. The latest thing is I have a weird relationship with owls. I can't go 24 hours without seeing some sort of owl, real or fake." That's a quote from one of your players that's playing today.
Well, if I had the context of that, I might be able to help
you. I don't think there is any context. I think that's my point. It's just sort of bang there in the middle of the article explaining that he's quirky.
Yeah, well, footy's got all sorts of different characters.
As long as he keeps playing the way he plays. I hope he keeps seeing owls.
Hey, he's got a pink headband today that he's auctioning, so if we can raise some funds for BCNA, if he gets... plays a great game, that'll be good too.
Yeah, spot on. And we talked about BCNA earlier on, Pete. You can get yourself involved by texting PINK to 0437 371 371 or visit bcna.org.au. Peter Jackson, CEO of the Melbourne Football Club. Thanks for joining us. Hope that wasn't too stressful for you.
No, not at all.
Have a wonderful afternoon and best of luck to you and the Demons.
Thank you very much. Pete.
It's time for...
the Sunday Rubs.
Oh, back to school.
Back to school quiz.
The boys weren't sure about this early doors. Now Swatter has raced in from the catering area to get involved. Test your buzzers.
Swatter.
Yes.
JJ.
Yes.
Duck, duck.
Yes.
Ruse.
Righto. Here we go. The running total. Swatter, 2. Duck, 2. Ruzy, 1. JZ, 1. Back to school quiz. We start with maths, and there is a new part of the quiz today, a new style of question. We'll get to that shortly. Maths. How many games did Brent Harvey play?
JJ.
JJ.
432.
Yes, nice start by Clarkey. So Jay-Z goes to one.
I wouldn't have got that.
No,
well, that's all right. You folks didn't even get your buzzers operating. Okay, history. We go back to the 2015 Grand Final, where Hawthorn took on the Sydney Swans, I believe. Which player kicked...
Hold on. Got a problem with my mic.
Oh, no.
Jay, get me live. Get me on.
Oh, just what a, is in the background.
Well,
this is a sabotage.
Go now, Howie. Go now.
No, I won't ask him now. You move around there,
Jay-Z's
Swatter.
Jay-Z's unplugged it.
This is unbelievable. Jay-Z
sabotage.
Has unplugged Swatter.
Sorry about
Stop
that,
talking, Swatter. We can't hear you Swatter. In the background. Hang on. I think someone's unplugged someone or something. Here we go. Righto. We go back to the 2015 Grand Final. You just have to yell out if you think you know it, Swatter. Which player kicked the most goals that day?
Ruse. Jack Gunston.
Ruzy, very nicely
done. Do I need to get the goals as
no,
well?
No, but have a go.
4.
Yes, well done, Ruzy. The boys might have been doing a bit of study. Swatter, testing. No, he can't get
it.
He's out. Lucky. Geography. Which 4 clubs did Scotty Cummings play
duck,
for?
Duck.
It was West Coast, Port Adelaide, Essendon.
Yes.
And Collingwood.
Yes, Ducky. Nice start. All one apiece except for Swatter, who's been nobbled. Okay, we go back to Geelong versus Hawthorn, round 1, 2016. Who is this player?
Bartell sits it to the hotspot. Oh! Mountainous climb! Top of the square.
Mental?
No.
Ruse.
Ruzy.
Patrick Dangerfield.
Yes, in the goal square. Paddy Dangerfield.
Round 1, the big grab.
Yep. Great photo.
And missed the goal.
Yeah, he did miss the goal. But the Cats went on to win. Duck 1, Ruzy 2, Jay-Z 1. Schwatter shattered because he's out. Hang on. Should have a go on my mic. How are you feeling?
Piss off.
Not happy about that. All right, English. We're in school here, Schwatter. English. How do you spell Schoenmakers?
JJ.
Yes.
S-C-H. Yes. O. Bugger off, Schwatter. O-E-N-M-A-K-E-R-S.
Yes. Oh, it's getting... Now, Duck 2, Ruzy 2, Jay-Z 2.
That's a real journo question.
I think I've got that every quiz.
You have got that. The vowels and the spelling of names.
Let's be honest. These boys spent a lot of time at footy training when they weren't at school, Jay-Z. All right. This week, who said
this.
Nah, just ironic, Bruce, isn't it?
Cross line.
So cute.
You just made a couple.
I can hear with the breath. He had the breath going. He's a very heavy breather in his press conference.
He didn't even speak. Jeez. He just inhaled. Yeah. Okay, Roozy 3, Jay-Z 2, Duck 2, and the new part of the quiz here. Oh. Who am I? Now, you can get whenever you want, Sale of the Century style. But if you get it wrong, you're out. So you can't be shouting okay. above if
you get it. I like that. That's
I'm Tony Barber here.
Good innovation.
All right. Who am I? I was born on the 20th September 1961. I played 250 games of VFL AFL football, kicking 549 goals. I made my debut in round 4, 1979, at Victoria Park. I won two Copeland trophies in 1982.
Ruse.
Roozy.
Peter Dacos.
Whoa, Roozy.
You know what? I was going to say Peter Dacos. Seriously, I had Peter
Gunner,
Dacos in my head.
Shoulda, woulda, didn't. Well, Roozy well takes done. Out the quiz.
Well done,
Roozy.
Jeez, there was a lot of pressure at home from the family. I haven't done anything this week except for study for this quiz, I'm telling you.
You've done well. For Coates Hire, this is the footy preview. Can't leave the site. Coates Hire delivers, calls 13, 15, 52. Look at Duck, is that cut up? Yeah. I knew it, but I didn't
you
say
know what?
It.
Isn't it amazing when we started this quiz, it was a real sort of, the attitude was flat.
Yes.
Now you got Swatter really peed off because he couldn't get involved. And now everyone's really up. We look forward to it.
Now, good earlier stuff. On in the show, Rodney Eade came on and I sort of, to be honest, asked him lightheartedly at the end that he must be looking forward to the trip to China, and that unveiled a whole can of worms. This was the response from the Gold Coast coach.
I guess you can't get a direct flight there. You know, by the time we leave here, catch a bus to Brisbane and be there a couple of hours early, it'll be about 20 hours, 21 hours by the time we get there. So not many players are in business, so an exit rows and all that sort of thing. So the tall players, that smog you talk about, hopefully there's no respiratory problems. We won't take any players who have got asthma or have got some respiratory problems anyway.
Interesting comments, and I in the interview we did question him, so not all your players are flying business. And he said no, and everybody's eyebrows in this box went up, especially yours, Roos. In fact, you were shaking your head continuously.
Well, we just had the collective bargaining agreement, which, correct me if I'm wrong, Jay-Z, a lot of it is around accommodation, flights.
It's a big factor.
It's a big factor, if I read it correctly. We've just heard an AFL senior coach saying his team is going on a 20-hour trip, Duck, and, I won't put words in his mouth, I was going to say majority. There are players that are flying economy. I'd find that absolutely staggering. Now, whether there's a block of money that the Gold Coast have been given, it's up to them. I don't know, but I cannot believe you're going to be asked to fly that distance and expected to be a professional athlete and play and fly economy.
Even I said to Brian Taylor, sitting on a plane last week, flying back from Canberra on a really early flight, 6:15 flight, it was, Roozy, and BT and I weren't flying business, but we're in row 3 because on those particular planes, only very small business. Plane was full, but row 3, so we had the extra seat. Gil McLaughlin was on the flight. The CEO of the AFL was in business just in front of BT and I. And then you had the Premiership coach walking down, Luke Beveridge walking down and sitting in between a few people. I just went, I don't know why, but I see our sport as being, you know, it's the biggest sport in Australia, certainly in the winter, and then you have cricket in the summer. But the Premiership coach walking down, sitting, it just doesn't sit well with me. He should be flying business class. That's just my personal opinion. I just think that's where our coaches should be sitting, and I think the players. Albeit on some of those flights, you simply can't because they don't have enough business class. So I get that. But if you're the senior coach of a team, I think you should be flying business class.
But by the very nature of what it is called, we have got players going to do their business in another country.
Yeah, no, that's...
So by the very nature
But there's enough business class on those flights.
So by the very nature of what it's called business class.
Okay,
so for those people out there that are saying, oh, they're precious or whatever, all we're saying is this group of players are going to perform what they're paid to do. I cannot believe, and we've all flown economy, premium economy, business class. There is a dramatic difference when you get off a flight from a business class seat than there is an economy. And we're asking these players to fly over there and perform at their best. It's ridiculous.
I'm looking up in the background here and notice that the NBA playoffs are on at the moment. How many times do you reckon LeBron's flown economy?
He has his own plane, Duck, but that's a whole other scenario.
Who are you tipping, Rosie? Everything you've just heard over the past half an hour, what chance do you give the Suns?
Zero.
Why?
I don't want to put words in Rocket's mouth, but do any of us think that that wasn't an angry coach talking about going and playing in China?
But is there a responsibility to the greater game to think, right, it's our club, we're just going to have to suck it up, or that doesn't apply in the week-to-week performance of the coach?
There is a responsibility, but all I'm saying is give the players the best possible chance that they can to perform at their absolute best. So I'm not saying don't play the game, but I'm saying put them in business class. Make sure, I don't know, were they flying over Tuesday? Make sure they're getting acclimatized. If you are going to put on a show over there, but by the sound of it, and Rocket talked about some respiratory problems, they're not going to play players. By the sounds of it, there could be some players in the Suns team that won't even be playing.
To back up everything that you've said all morning, and Koshy's obviously, and Port Adelaide, they're the big push into China, as we know. But if Port Adelaide miss the finals because they lose this game in China, then this has been a massive, massive, massive fail for Port Adelaide, and I don't care how much money they make out of it.
Well, we also just had Howie, the CEO of the Melbourne Football Club, and he was really honest as well. Said, look, not that they would have got invited, so again, not putting words in his mouth, but they wouldn't have gone. So he's making a decision as the CEO of the Melbourne Football Club that 20 hours May, he said this, 20 hours in May, not that they would have been invited, he wanted to make that clear, but they would have chosen not to do it.
So, I hear what you're saying, Duck. My understanding is that this is a Gold Coast home game, though. So Port would have been playing it on the Gold Coast because I don't think Port can give up any of their games at the Adelaide Oval. That's my understanding of it, Jay-Z, that this would have actually been a game, if it wasn't played in China,
It's not Port Adelaide.
No, I believe it's a Gold Coast home game.
Yeah, I think it is.
Port Adelaide contracted to play their home games all at the Adelaide
Oval.
Yeah.
So, and that was some of the amusement around it, that Port Adelaide was sort of trying to dictate jumpers, etc. Even though it's an away game for them, they are trying to own the concept. But yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it is an away game for Port Adelaide.
So Jay-Z, from an AFL point of view, so put your reporter's hat on.
Yep.
And Howie made a point about sometimes perhaps coaches do get a bit
which
is fine. Why would the AFL want the game to be played over there?
Really, it's just a game promotion thing. Well, remember, they were trying to do some things in South Africa and America in the past. I think they're just trying to bring the game out and promote it in an international market. You know, we know what sort of superpower China is, especially financially. So if they can tap into that, you know, through sponsors, etc., then that's just what it's about, trying to grow the game.
10,000 seat stadium. How many Chinese do you think will be in that 10,000?
Oh, it'd be a lot of expats, wouldn't it?
That's what I would have thought.
And is the game being broadcast into China itself? I know there was discussions about that. I think Damien Barrett was telling us on Friday night that there still wasn't. I don't want to paraphrase him and get it wrong, but I still think he was saying they're still trying to sort out the broadcast into China itself.
I believe there was some doubt still over it, but the AFL pretty confident that will be the case. Otherwise,
holistic question, Roosie, do you support the idea of taking our game offshore to be played internationally or not?
Oh, we did a thing when I was coaching Sydney 2006. We went to the G'day LA Week in Los Angeles, but it was in middle of January, end of January. It was fantastic. I don't have a problem with it at all. I'm a big supporter, having been to America many, many times. Mason Cox, Jason Holmes is now playing. I've had a lot to do with particularly the American. I don't have a problem with it. What I do have a problem with, you're talking about, as Peter Jackson said, middle of May, you're talking about 20-hour flight, you're talking about what Duck was saying, if either of these teams lose this game and miss the eight, it's a significant... And I think if you asked, honestly, every player and every coach, both those teams, they wouldn't want to go.
It'll be a big talking point this week. We'll be covering that game next Sunday on Triple M Footy, so that will be interesting.
By the way, the Seven commentary team, guess who's going to China?
Oh, he's straight.
Bruce Lee, Bruce McAvaney, and Lee Matthews. Bruce Lee to China? Come on, guys.
Now, Duck. if you're going to bring humorous stuff to the table, there's only one rule, Duck, and that is that it needs to be humorous.
Well, Seven ben, commentary team is
yeah,
Bruce
no,
Lee.
We got it. We got it. It just wasn't funny, Duck.
This is Jay-Z's Big Three.
Makes me chuckle.
All right, Big Daddy, what have you got for us?
Hey, the deliberate out of bounds is again. Oh, no, it's not the deliberate out of bounds. It's the insufficient attempt issue is going to blow up once again. There was a controversial one last night where Jaden Short fumbled the ball near the boundary. It sort of bubbled out and went out of bounds, and he was pinged for the free kick. Now, the two coaches last night, in particular, Luke Beveridge, was pretty critical of it. Let's have a listen to what he said after their narrow win over Richmond on this.
Yeah, what was the wording change again?
Insufficient intent.
is that what the crowd were yelling out? Insufficient intent. Insufficient intent. There were definitely ones that weren't paid that were paid last week. Is it clearer or less clearer? I don't know. I feel like this is, is this Morecambe and Wise or Faulty Towers? I'm not sure.
Absolutely big spray from the Premiership coach, in my view, and I expect from the AFL to say that was an incorrect decision against Jaden Short, which makes it so hard when we're trying to get some clarity around this rule. Now, Damien Hardwick.
I like the comparison to Faulty Towers. That was very, very funny.
Manuel.
And now Damien Hardwick, Richmond coach, his take on the issue.
Good show.
Oh, I actually feel really sorry for the umpires. The amount of interpretation they've got to make. We just keep adding layer upon layer, so I don't blame the umps at all. Holding the ball rule. How many interpretations are in that? It's not their fault. They've got to go through five decisions to make an actual decision. So, anyway, I actually think they do a pretty good job, to be honest, under the circumstances.
And it's a good point from Dimmer Hardwick. You guys call a lot of footy. You got any idea which way the umpire's going to go when we see these sorts of decisions?
You generally get a trend, I reckon, Roosie, within a particular game, but from game to game, it can differ. And that's what's confusing, I think, to everyone. And that's what's confusing to a coach, because if you're Richmond and you watch Friday night, it used to be, remember, Roosie, it used to be the first game. Yeah, so all coaches would watch Friday night footy and they would say, OK, that's the theme this week. That's how it's going to be interpreted. So the deliberate out of bounds are going to be really strong on it. The holding the ball, this is the way we're going to go. And generally that theme would follow through the weekend. That's not happening.
No. Jay-Z, I'm going to ask you a question, because we're told that it's the fans that drive the fan surveys. Now, I've been to two functions the last week, one Beverly Hills Junior Footy Club, one at a marketing company. And I've actually asked all those people in the room, because the question that most comes up is about umpiring. So I've said to both these groups of people, well, have you filled out what do you think of the rules? And to a person in both those rooms, they want them to be left alone. So why does the AFL continually tell us that the fans are driving the rule changes when the fans are telling us they want the game to be left alone?
That is the common feedback always, isn't it? Even from the players and from the fans, is that they want to stop these rule changes. As Damien Hardwick just said then, you know, it's a rule to fix a rule to fix a rule, and then it just becomes so complex. And now the insufficient attempt. I like what they're doing in terms of trying to keep the ball in play. I think that's good. But I think we've just been so harsh on some of the players. You know, when it's a fumble or a skill error, that's the really difficult one. Hey, Scotty Pendlebury's lovely wife, Alex, is due to give birth in the next couple of weeks. Not sure about the specific game, but how do we feel about players missing games for the birth of their first child? Are we okay with that? I would assume this day and age that we're okay with that.
Oh, look, family always comes first for me. I mean, you know, there's no question about that. I think it becomes... it's often a non-issue. I mean, I think we build it up, and I've been involved in it a couple of times. Darren Jolly prior to the 2006 Grand Final, end up having the baby before that. So,
look, Daniel Bradshaw?
Brady, I think there's been a few, Swatter, yes. but yeah. My view is family comes first, always. And then most of the time, I mean, you can't predict timing, but most of the time it doesn't become really an issue, does it?
Family first. If it's a grand final or a prelim, please hang on, sweetheart.
Oh, very good. Then
I tell you, just before we get too far past that, for those that are into podcasts, you need to point your one to called Jock and Jerno. The Jerno being Jay-Z, the Jock being Scotty Pendlebury. Can you get it on iTunes?
You can,
because I've been starting to listen to it, and you get some nice discussion going with Scotty Pendlebury. So for those that like their podcasts, Jock and Jerno, and I also note...
A little bit of self-promotion.
Well, it's not. I'm promoting promoting it for him. And I do notice sort of every Wednesday,
yes,
Jay-Z's article is based around Jock and Juno, and it gets about 15 different plugs in the paper.
Well, we have had some newsworthy traction. We had Joel Selwood on last week. How he was called a sore loser, I'm absolutely staggered by. He's the most competitive, one of the greatest leaders, one of the most successful players. I just can't understand how possibly people would think he was a sore loser for having a go at Scottie Pendlebury verbally. I think that's why we admire him, don't we? But that's another issue.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if it was self-promotion, Duck, I'd be saying check out the Howie Games podcast. Yes. I wouldn't be talking about Jock and Juno.
No, by the way, both are very good. I've listened to both. You're both doing a terrific job.
Just to clear that Joel Selwood thing up, I think all he said to Scottie Pendlebury was, hey, guess what? You guys are no good. You know, you're not going to play finals this year. And Scottie says back to him, well, we just beat you. Siren goes. Joel says, oh, we'll get you next time. And Scottie says, all right, good luck with that. You know, we'll leave it there. Yeah, that was it.
They were stiff, the siren went, weren't they? Like, the siren, it was sort of, you could sense there was an awkward moment because the siren went. Like, if the siren hadn't have gone, they both would have run their separate ways and no one would have made anything of it at all.
Bit overblown. And the last one, the big issue this week, and I dare say this could be back news, what we just heard from Rocket E then in terms of the smog fears and the respiratory issues of some players, he was a bit frosty. Rocket, I've just touched base with Port Adelaide. Hang on a sec, Duck. And they said they're taking... two plane loads of players, so they're staggering the flights with Cathay Pacific, who's a premium partner of the club, and that way they can get all the players in either business class or premium economy. So no one will be in the absolute
Koshy and Keithy Thomas. Keithy's a very good mate of mine, Keithy.
Yes.
If you're out there listening, I'll expect to see Keith and Koshy in premium economy.
That's where they should be, Duck. What were you going to say?
I had a question, but I'm going to keep it for talking footy on Monday night.
He's cracked us.
Now, Duck, you can't be doing that. Hey, Roosie, just something I wanted to ask you about, and I don't have the exact quote, but now you're here.
Too.
You can explain it to us. Yep. I think you were quoted in the media this week discussing Buddy Franklin and the pay he was getting at the Sydney Football Club and how that could affect them moving forward.
Yeah, there was about six things I was asked about why the Swans, and that was probably number six on the list. But when you mention Buddy's name, it becomes number one pretty quickly. So
what did you say?
No, I spoke to a journalist who I know and really wanted to get a feel for perhaps why they were zero and six. And it was really just expanding on what Horse had said last week about their lack of pre-season, injuries, young players. You know, the list is obviously a bit skinnier because you've got Buddy Franklin and Tippett, which is really purely mathematics, Jay-Z, really, isn't it? I mean, if you're paying $2 million plus dollars to two players,
that
means your depth's going to be affected. So it was really a summary of why they sort of got to where they are. And then I think it was really complimentary towards the end. But I think what I've learned, as soon as you mention Buddy's name, it becomes a bigger story than what it was. So it was really more around the composition of their list, free agent. I think I also said, look, I hope for Rossi's sake that Nate Fyfe stays at Freo. But if Fyfe goes to another club at 1.5, then mathematically, you know, you could have two players at 750, you could have three players at 500, you could have what you do the math yourself. So it was purely and simply a discussion around, you know, the mathematics of your list.
And Buddy's got five goals today, Roosie. So he heard your spray, mate, and he's fired back. No, just kidding.
Funny how Chinese whispers work, because I was told, did you hear what Roosie said? He said that Buddy, soul and handedly, has cost the Swans any chance of going forward because he's on the big coin.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Triple M rocks footy.